Hey everybody, it's Sunday, August 4th, 2013, and this is the 56th episode of the Retro Computing Roundtable. Changed back from black to white, but no matter where I go, there's one thing I like to know, will I ever find my way back to us? The RCR is the podcast about computer history, nostalgia, and collecting by computer history enthusiasts for computer history enthusiasts. I'm David Grillish, and I'm hosting today. Plus, I'm joined by both Carrington Vanson and Earl Evans. It's a homecoming show. Let's hear it.
Yay.
So, Carrington, you weren't on the last show.
Nope.
Was Earl, you missed a show recently, too? I just know we haven't all been together in a while.
Well, I was in Japan.
So, I knew there was something. So, there you go. So, this is the first time all three of us back together. Anything new, Carrington, other than your recent trip to Kansas Fest?
There is nothing but Kansas Fest.
Sure. I kind of assumed that, but nothing else. Nothing else going on in your life. What about since you got back?
Just catch up on work. So much work.
Yeah, I imagine
piles, and piles of work.
Not quite. You were gone 5 days, I guess, right? 6 days?
No, I was gone for a week and a half.
Oh, really? Oh, that's right. You left on Sunday.
I left Sunday and then got back the following a week from that Wednesday or something, Thursday.
Because you had about 2 days travel time each way too, right?
Three days.
Okay.
Yeah, I went down on my motorcycle, so I sort of
putted
down and putted back.
Was that fun?
It was awesome.
No, we're not there. We're not in that segment yet.
Sorry. It was, can't tell you.
Not Kansas Fest. I meant the motorcycle trip.
Oh, okay.
The motorcycle trip was fantastic. Whenever I get a new two-wheeled vehicle, whether it's a motorcycle or a scooter or whatever, I like to take a road trip with it, sort of break in the bike. Everything has its own personality, and you sort of bond a bit with the vehicle. It can save your life later. So I like to take a road trip on the new bike. So it was a perfect excuse.
Yeah, so you bought it new. It's a fairly new bike.
Yeah, like I actually got it last year, though, but I hadn't taken it on I meant to bring it to last year's Kansas Fest, but I had exhaust difficulties.
And it's a Harley-Davidson?
So. Yes, it is. Yeah, it's a street bob, it's called.
What do you think about some of these other American motor... I don't know a lot about the subject, but what do you think about, like, Indian and some of these other American motorcycle companies up and coming from an outsider?
Well, Indian's not really up and coming. It's like the...
It'd
be the oldest one in the world. So,
but it kind of made a comeback, right?
Yeah, but Indians look like 1930s bikes, and I like Art Deco, but I'm not big on that style of bike, and they seem to only want to make that. But Victory makes a good bike, and that's a U.S. bike as well. But I'm a Canadian, so I don't really give a crap that it's made in the U.S. That doesn't help my economy.
Oops, I forgot.
Yeah, really. So, there's Hondas and other things built right here in Canada. More that I just wanted something with a lot of grunt to it, so it's my first Harley, and I'm really digging it.
Get everybody a hog.
It is a highly unrefined motorcycle. Like, I'm really liking it, but compared to every motorcycle I've ever owned, it is a shaky, low-tech beast. just like me. But it has a lot of character to it, so I'm digging it.
Cool. So, Earl, what's up with you, then?
Work. Work is
Anything
crazy.
New? Last 2 weeks, really?
Yep. Yep, just lots of...
I better say this quietly. For me, my work has been like the slowest I've had in a long time, so I'm sorry for both of you. But it's not always good being really slow at work either.
I actually don't mind it being busy. I mean, as everybody says, the time goes by fast.
It does.
And
You'll
we're doing good
quicker.
Stuff. Yes, indeed. Thank you for
I think
that.
It's better for me. All right, well, we're going to move right into our items of interest in the news. And so the host topic, we got an email. And so Earl passed that along to me and Carrington. He's the email guru of the group. And so basically the topic is we're going to revisit the topic, I guess, was it last show? I think it was just last show we had this topic. Will this retro computing hobby last? So we got an email from, I'm getting there, I think it's Scott. And so let me read the email real quick. Just listened to episode 55. Thanks for the show. Wanted to chime in on the subject you were talking about. Will this retro computing last? Well, I don't know either, but by chance had just watched a home video on YouTube taken at some recent retro computer show. Suddenly had the realization that everyone was me. By that, I mean my age or close to it, 40. Grew up with a 64 800 XL and have fond memories. With this thought, I'm afraid that indeed the retro computing interest as we know it now simply cannot last. There will be some interest, but for someone born in 1999, simply won't have that feeling. We were live during one very amazing time, basically the advent of computers. Obviously, I know that computers were much older, but you know what I mean. And I'm going to stop there. His email goes on a little bit longer, but that's basically the gist of how he feels about it. So let's discuss. Do you agree?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things on the end of his email, if I recall, is that he said, you know, it can't go on because the generation that is currently the fuel for the retro computing world actually saw that exciting time in the 70s and 80s and that when home computers were going through their their birth period. And so, the contention is people aren't going to feel that way about computers in the 90s or the zeros or the mobile devices today because it's just not, by comparison, it's just not that exciting. I mean, it's kind of fun gadgets, but, you know, there's not that... I don't even know how to describe it. You know, it's just, it was the birth of an industry. Really heady times to live in.
What do you think, Carrington?
I disagree completely. I'm contentious that way, though. I think the reality is, of the 7 and something billion people in the world, a tiny fraction of a millionth of a percent are interested in this hobby. Mm-hmm. And so it's a rounding error, the difference in the number of people that would be interested in this hobby about the same period, say 50 years from now. I think it's the same thing as cars. The idea that today... It's like saying that today there's not a single person on this planet who's interested in cars from the 1920s. Hmm. Sure there are. There's almost nobody. Yeah, and I can walk up and down streets and never meet anybody. I can walk up and down streets right now and never meet anybody who's either used or has any interest at all in the Commodore 64. It's a niche hobby. It'll stay a niche hobby. I think there'll always be somebody interested. Maybe it'll get smaller and smaller numbers, but I don't think it'll be so small that it'll disappear. I think it's more that the products themselves might make the hobby impossible to follow. If you want to get into repairing and collecting 1920s cars right now, it's a very expensive hobby and they're a very rare item. So where would you even start? Even if you had an interest, where would you get them? It might be the case, the same thing for retro computers of the particular period we're talking about now, but they were also made in the thousands, tens of thousands, on numbers that cars never were when you're dealing with really super old cars. So I think it's the same thing. I think if people will be interested in old dishware and people will be interested in old ceiling fans and toys from the 1700s, and that's just, you know, it'll be a niche thing, and it'll be people of a certain age, because you have... Honestly, it's a first world hobby. You got to have wherewithal and time on your hands to say, I want to spend my weekends toying around with a 1980s computer. Really? Okay. I guess everything's going well with your family, because it's a relatively expensive hobby, and I think it's a total first world hobby. I don't think it's going to go away. I do think that it appeals maybe more to people right now because we're the people who grew up with those computers. So people that do it 20 years from now, mm-hmm. will be in a different situation. But there's people that come to Kansas Fest that are half my age, and you know, they were not around playing with the Apple II when it was due, but they have an interest.
That's true. That's true. But, I mean, they're not the majority of the people.
No, but we're not the majority of the people. It's such a niche thing that I don't think it's a... I don't see it going away.
Really,
I don't think it's
going to
be huge either. So.
Well, even if you take the biggest hobby, which I can't, you know, I don't know, take a really big hobby, I can't think of one offhand, we're still talking a minority of the... population of anybody. I mean, it's still a niche.
When it comes to collecting hobbies,
or just really small one.
But yeah, most people's hobbies are more viewership. Like people like to watch football. So but there's fewer people that are out there collecting 1940s football trophies.
And that's exactly so. My take on the whole thing is, so I partially agree with Scott, and I disagree. So when it comes to awareness of computer history, and be it really old computer history or more recent, that awareness is only going to keep growing. There will be more and more presence of whether full-blown computer museums or exhibits in museums. In any case, there'll be, like, a lot of people know about 1920s automobiles. They may not be experts at it. So the other side of that is the hardware collectors or people who can actually put their hands on old, whether it be cars or computers, that's kind of limited. And frankly, as time keeps ticking by, it might reach a peak, and then it has to start dropping down like a bell curve, right? Because there's only so many of them. And
I have a comment on that. You know, the last show when we talked about this, somebody said, "What about 3D printing?" Now, today with 3D printing, you really couldn't like print an Apple II. Mm-hmm. But who knows? 20 to 30 years from now, you might just push a button on your replicator. And the next thing you know, an Apple II comes out. Silicon complete, You know, just the whole thing.
And then you just pour it back into Grey Goo when you're done. I love
it. Can I demonstrate, Earl? Can I demonstrate your point for you?
Yes, please
Earl,
do.
Oh, okay. Earl Grey, hot.
Exactly.
Earl Grey, cold. Earl Grey in the pot, 9 days old. Yeah. That'd be awesome, Earl. I like that idea.
That's a good point. Now, of course, that would be reproductions, which is still valid. It's still part of the hobby.
Wouldn't be the original thing, but it would be a hardware reproduction.
I agree.
And so the future dynamic. Is Mimeo. The future is all going to be replica ones.
But good topic, and I guess we will all see what happens. And all right.
One other related question: would you guys put the programmable digital computer in the top 5 inventions of the history of mankind?
Well, it depends. Name the other inventions. Give me a quick list of all of
them.
I don't know. If we're talking, it depends if we're talking simple mechanical devices like fire or water purification or something like that.
Yeah, we go with those.
But if we're talking complicated devices like the automobile or the telephone or something like that.
I mean, I think squarely in the 20th century, absolutely. It's not the most important.
I might stick it in if we take a broad look as like programmable computers in general. Yeah, they've had such a massive effect on so many things, and mostly for the positive, I would argue that. Yeah, I think there's a good chance I'd put that in top 5.
Yeah, me too. Which is why I think that could argue to the retro computing hobby, at least in some form, remaining relevant for decades or centuries.
And also it'll change in that, like, we're focusing right now on the idea of retro computing, and we're talking specifically the focus on late 70s to late 80s computers. It's a pretty narrow market. I'm sure that later they'll focus on retro computing, like things like the PlayStation 9. And, like, retro computing will change itself, and maybe they'll have less interest in this particular range. But we have less interest. We don't talk a lot about the computers from the 1940s and 1950s. But, you know, there were computers then, and I have a vague interest in the big iron. There's my specific niche I'm interested in because of my nostalgia linked to it. So maybe it'll just change. There'll be less people nostalgic for the 1984 computers and more nostalgic for 2004 computers.
Interesting. Okay. Sorry, David. You can move along.
Move along, David. Move along.
Wow. Can you guys see me okay? Everything's fine when you're in?
No, it's not.
Oh, no. My mouth. I'm still talking to you, so I assume everything's okay.
I hear you just fine. I don't see you just fine.
I hear you, but I can see right through you, David.
Wow, man. My computer's locked up.
Oh.
My mouse doesn't move. My seconds on
are
my
you
time
nostalgic for your computer from 10 minutes ago?
Very much so. I guess, hold on a second. I don't think how am I going to continue like this? Wow, I haven't had a lockup in a long time.
Ouch. Do you want to like jump out and jump back in?
Yeah, I don't see an alternative. So next
no, we'll
up
wait
is,
here.
Is well, and Karen can talk about Kansas Fest. I can catch up to it.
Sounds good. Perfect.
Recorded. Wow, check that out. Okay, so I'm gonna kill my computer, guys, and I'll be back as quick as I can. All right.
Kansas Fest.
What about Kansas Fest? It's that show. Right?
Awesome! It was unbelievably awesome. It was my fourth time attending. I kept telling people when I was there early on that it was my third Kansas Fest. But I guess because they're starting to run together. But I realized it was my fourth when I looked at the pamphlet we're given and has all the logos from, well, maybe not all the logos, but it has logos from the last 20 or so, maybe 25, I don't know, Kansas's Fest. I don't know what the plural would be. And I recognized 4 of the logos, and I realized, oh, I've been to those 4. So
nice.
It was actually my fourth one, and I wouldn't necessarily say it was the best Kansas Fest I've attended, but I think I feel that about every one that I go to. Like, they're all special, they're all amazing. This one had some highlights that differentiated it from earlier ones, in that Woz was there, so that was what made the big news, and it was exciting and fun to meet him. Randy Wigginton was the keynote speaker, and it was an amazing keynote, and he hung out for the next few days as well, and it was great to see him. Really interesting, really knowledgeable fellow. But in addition to like the big names, all the regular Kansas Fest stuff, the sessions and the camaraderie and playing with the vintage gear and doing some programming and all of that was just amazing and rewarding, and it's just everything you would remember, Earl, from having gone last year. Just there's nothing quite like this event in retro computing communities. Like this, it really is different when you actually live in the event full time for 4 days. Like, you're all dorming together and stuff. It's just, it's an amazing experience. Highlight of the year. Just absolutely love it. Can't wait to go next year.
Do you know if they're going to post any of those videos?
Yes. I think, the problem is, it doesn't seem to be like an official video posting thing that happens from the Kansas Fest community or committee. It seems to be just individuals record sessions. And maybe those individuals are therefore going to make them available. I'm not sure. It's kind of too bad that there isn't an official videographying happening, because it'd be nice if that could be made available in an official capacity later on.
It is kind of too bad, but like you say, even if you could see the video, it doesn't give you the true essence of being there, because, man, that was just...
The sessions are really good. Like, there's lots of great info that gets dumped at Kansas Fest, and I think it would be good and important and entertaining to preserve that and to distribute it. So, like, the sessions that go on, like, when I go there, it's things like seeing Martin Hay get up and give a talk and inspire the heck out of me. Like, part of Kansas Fest for me is I go, I watch Martin Hay, and I come home all buzzing, ready to do stuff. Like, there's certain people there that will just inspire me. It's just such... I just come home riding a high after going to Kansas Fest, and I can't wait to go back. And my head is filled with Apple II projects that I could work on. And so I'm trying to, this year, not just let that lapse, but I've started work on things that hopefully will come to fruition by next year's Kansas Fest.
Oh, that would be fun.
Mm.
Like programming projects?
Yeah, one's a programming thing, one's a hardware hack. So hopefully, we'll see what happens, but I am hopeful.
Cool.
Yeah.
I imagine meeting was pretty fun.
It was. It was my first time meeting him. I don't really get starstruck, but he's a down-to-earth, nice guy. Like, he is just as real as he comes across. Like, he's just an everyday guy. And he wore his Kansas Fest t-shirt, and he hung out, and he sat in the audience. And what was really fun is people would get up and present, and it must have been interesting presenting with Woz about, like, say, Apple II hardware, and Woz is in the audience ready to spot your errors. But... Somebody would get up and say something, or say, okay, well, this chip was used here and I had to work around it or something. And then Woz would put his hand up and say, like, would you like to know why we picked that one? And then everyone would turn around and he would fill in some info about like why they selected a certain thing or why he implemented software in a certain way. And so it was like having access to an incredibly smart little mini Wikipedia in the back that would just fill in info. Like, it was just... Made it super extra fun. He's such a nice guy, and I got to get one of his stainless steel business cards, which is great that he always gets out. So I got one of those.
That's interesting.
Really, really fun, and it's got his phone number on it, punched out in like punch card style. So like you have to be able to read a punch card to know what his telephone number is. So that was pretty cool. And the whole thing was great. It was just a lot of people were getting all things signed by Woz, but I didn't bother doing that. I'm not really into collecting signatures or whatever, but it was really nice to meet him. And Randy as well, he was great. He was a super treat to get to talk to and had tons of info and really well-spoken and really nice guy, like just fantastically nice guy. So great keynote speaker this year.
Fun.
I loved it. It was awesome. So Earl, do you think you'll go next year, or is it going to be Japan for you every year from now on?
Oh, I really want to go to Kansas Fest next year. I'm saving my pennies already. I mean, like I mentioned in the last show, I would have gone this year, except it's just the amount of time to take off and, you know, the travel logistics and stuff, trying to cram too much, 10 pounds into a 5-pound bag. I just couldn't do it. But, it was funny, I was sitting around seeing the flickers and everything that people were posting, the photos and the tweets and that, and just... very, very jealous. I was looking at it and going, oh, no, now they're doing this. Oh, they're doing that. Hey, did you guys do the bite the bag thing?
They did. I didn't this year. I never do because I can barely stand over a bag, let alone lean over and bite it. That's just crazy. But, I think it was Crew who won this year, who came in second, I think, last year. There's a couple of guys who do it. They're just like... Ken's the same way. These crazy, bendy, gumby people who can just sort of stand
amazingly
up and...
Amazingly flexible, yeah. I know.
Bend over, like, basically a flat piece of paper by the end. Like, come on.
I was thinking, Ken, can you tie yourself into a pretzel for me? You
know,
I'd like to get a photo
of that. Yeah, but just stuff like that. Like, I like those... I don't participate in that one, but I like that it's there, and I like that it's a tradition. Like, Kansas Fest has lots of those things. But my favorite parts of Kansas Fest still are the sessions, especially the sessions where I go in and I'm not even sure what somebody's going to be talking about, and I don't get it from the description, and then it's something really interesting, those little surprises. Love that. And then it's the talking, like just going to the cafeteria at lunch and just sitting down, and everybody you're surrounded with is willing to talk about Apple II stuff or vintage computer stuff in general. So be able to sit down and just look across at somebody and say, what do you think of this? Or what's your favorite joystick? And just have those conversations, which I don't get to have in real life with people. So it's
right.
That's what's exciting. And that's why next year it'll be a Kansas Fest, no doubt, without WAS and without that. But it's not in any way going to be a disappointment, in the same way that this wasn't necessarily my favorite Kansas Fest, or I think even the biggest deal to me, because WAS and Randy were there, because I had all the best experiences are the same ones I had the three previous times, and those will continue, hopefully, year after year. They've already announced the dates for next year's Kansas Fest. It's growing, and it seems to be growing at a sufficient rate that they're every year they think, well, hopefully we're going to have another one. And this year they said, at Kansas Fest, they announced the dates for next year, said it's definitely a go. So that's very exciting.
Nice. Hey, David, welcome back.
Oh, David.
It took me a while, but I made it.
Where'd you go?
Oh, my gosh, man. It was a hard crash on my computer because it came up and macOS even said, you apparently had a shutdown or whatever. So I'm back.
Hello.
Now I have to go listen to what you just said.
No, it was all secret stuff. You don't get to know.
I caught that last, 1 minute of it.
The best part about Kansas Fest was David wasn't there.
Oh, man. Hey, I got a very nice postcard from you guys, by the way.
Yes,
so thank you.
That's another nice Kansas Fest tradition where it sends out postcards to some people. Earl, you should be getting one too if you haven't gotten
one. I got one and loved it.
Yeah, they send out postcards to people that are previous attendees but that couldn't make it this year. And so
I thought that was so incredibly thoughtful.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. That was a very nice thing. I appreciate it.
Yep.
So shall I move along now?
Yes, indeed.
Hopefully I won't crash on my previously uncrashable computer. So, Earl, you take it away. Now you're talking about reading the newspaper on your computer in 1981.
So, did you guys watch this video?
I did.
See it?
Yeah. I thought it was great.
No comics, though.
No comics.
No pictures. Photos and no comics.
But, I mean, we're talking about the 80s. And, you know, so this, to me, was kind of the advent. And it even makes me think even more so that you know, these guys in the print industry had decades to see this coming. And so when some of these print publications have issues like, well, you know, the digital world is killing us. Well, I mean, come on, guys. Did you not see this stuff happening in the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I thought that it was fascinating that these multiple newspapers and different print stuff collaborated so that you could get access online. Mm-hmm. I used to love getting the computer news on CompuServe in the 80s because you could really mm-hmm. find out what was going on in the industry and be ahead of the pack.
I wish we had a way of watching it like right now where we could. I guess there's some way we could, but then we could comment on it because I know I had a number of comments to make as I was watching it. But what you said, Earl, I know there was a couple of places where one of the guys of the newspaper said something about something. I don't see it as a threat to us, something like that, and we're not going to make any money off of it.
Yeah, so we're not going to try to make any money off this. I'm
like
well, you won't.
Yeah, but clearly one of the first things that pops in my head is, wow, you know, you guys are newspapers, and you didn't see how one day this might completely put you out of business.
I thought it was funny that they were using a Coco at the mm-hmm. at the newspaper end to post.
Yes, that was interesting, wasn't it?
It's like, well, that's an odd choice. I really wouldn't have thought. It's just the newspaper office didn't seem like a Coco sort of place. I thought they'd be using a Model 3.
I think I might have an answer for that.
Hit me with your answer.
I think because a lot of newspapers used Radio Shack products because of the Model 100. That was sort of the.
So Tandy may have had a foothold.
Compatibility.
In that
no.
Not because of compatibility, just because they were dealing with Tandy Radio Shack for that computer. And I think it's just a guess. Maybe that might have opened them up to
considering
the products. What's the Halo effect, right? It's what Apple uses.
I don't think you could play Halo on a Coco. I think you're wrong about that.
I don't know if you can play it on an Apple.
You can play it on the Atari 2600 now because a cartridge came out.
Oh, that was it.
Photorealistic, right. Too.
So moving along then, so I have an announcement here that the Cambridge Center of Computer History opened just a few days ago. Let me click on the link.
Lots of excitement around this.
Very good. Didn't we talk about this last February, I think, when they announced it was going to move?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
And they're still in the process of building it out, I think, and raising funds and all. So you can go to the different links here. Up to 80 computers and game consoles are on display. So it's in Cambridge, which is approximately like 50 or 60, I'm not sure if it's kilometers or miles north of London. So, you know,
milliliters.
Just north of London, in any case. Actually, I had a Wikipedia article up here. 80 kilometers north of London. Okay. So that just opened, and a couple other links here is a link directly. So it's a BBC article, and there's another, I will be a link in the show notes to their site, as well as I want to point out that they also hosted the recent Silicon Dreams there in about a month ago in early July. So that was the also the VCF UK. So 5th and 7th of July, they hosted that there, just to make everybody aware of that. So go check out that site, too, and there's some nice pictures there.
Yep, they're doing great stuff. I think they're definitely still looking for contributions, especially if you're on that side of the pond. It might be something worth checking out and maybe showing them some love.
It's the VCF GB, so sorry about that. Great Britain, not UK, is their official name of that. All right, so moving along, Carrington, it's now time for you to talk about the dying art of computer viruses.
Well, this is a strange article. Graham, I think it was McCluley is his name. He wrote an article, appeared in a magazine in a short form, and then this is the full version, has been put online. And it struck me as one of the most bizarre takes on computer nostalgia. Essentially, this article is lamenting the death of more interesting viruses. That it's basically saying it's really too bad. Viruses were better in the good old days. They're saying nowadays they're all just bots and they take over your computer, and it even shows a screenshot of a Windows computer. So see, you look at this and you can't even tell that it's infected. There's no art to it. Back in the day, it's like some guy saying basically, back in the day, our computer viruses used to put up fancy and colorful screens, and they'd make beeps and noises, and there was more to it. It was a more personal statement when they ripped off your data.
It was art.
Yeah, totally. It's a really bizarre take, and I hear this same argument all the time when it comes to computing. Like, oh, back in the day, you could understand a full computer, or it was more personal, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this guy's making all those same arguments, but about computer viruses. Like, he's longing for the days of more personal and more creative computer viruses. And it really seemed a strange thing to say. So I thought it was interesting enough that we should be sharing it with the RCR listenership.
That is a strange perspective. I've been in the computer security world now for, I don't know, like 20 years or something like that. And to be honest, I do have some nostalgia for the old stuff too. Just from a practical perspective, in the old days, the hackers were there just to goof around. And they wanted to, you know, poke at you, troll you a little bit, and maybe, like you were mentioning, bring up some artwork, skull and crossbones, and ha, 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 you got hacked, ah, 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 kind of thing. Whereas today, it's organized crime and, you know, international espionage and stuff like that. And the stakes are way higher. The amount of data that we have of a sensitive nature on the Internet, or I should say on computers, period, is way higher. So,
oh, sure. There's more on my main computer right now. Somebody with access to all that info can do real financial harm to me in a way that they never could back when it was just my Apple II. Now there's all my banking info, all the, like, so many links to so many things that come back to my credit cards. So sure.
So before, they were just poking around. And if they happened to nail you, I mean, the worst that would happen is that you'd have to format a couple floppy disks and you're like, rassum frassum. You know, and so, but today, the damage is potentially much greater.
I'll give you my take on it I've been in IT a long time too, but I'm in user support, you know, desktop support, desktop support or whatever. So it's kind of interesting because what he says is correct in a lot of ways. Because I'll explain this to people. People sometimes go, I think I have a virus. And sometimes you're just getting spammed, you know, the fake email and stuff. And I'll have to explain to them, I go, well, you know, years ago, there were viruses, and viruses would cause damage. You know, they delete your files and mess up your computer. And really, nowadays, there's no such thing as viruses so much anymore, you know, from the user side of things. It's more has to do with fraud. You know, all they're trying to do now is just fake you out and make you pay for fake antivirus or fake whatever, you know, just defraud you by hijacking your computer and stuff.
Yeah, you say, oh, you don't have a virus. You've got malware. What we call a keylogger. And a guy in Georgia, Russia now has your identity.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, because going blank, people stealing that information and stuff, that does exist. But, I mean, by and large, a lot of, at least what I've seen, it's just all, you know, just bothersome nonsense stuff. It just really slows their machine down.
Right.
So, yeah, that's an interesting take on it, though. It's an interesting article.
Yeah, it was something different. I hadn't seen somebody get nostalgic for old viruses before, so I thought, well, this is due.
Hey, guys, we have comments.
Oh, good.
So, Grumpier Than Now said a 3D printed Apple II would be much easier for traveling to Kansas Fest. Especially
true.
If it was printed on arrival. That would be cool. And he also guesses that the 80s will remain a focus for retro computing even into the future. And I think
so
that's
too.
Probably true. Yeah. And Christopher comments, Windows locking up makes me nostalgic for guru meditation errors, which I believe is a reference to the Amiga. Is that right, guys? That's what the Amiga would come up with when it would... also, VCF GB is much better than VCF UK in that acronym. So be careful not to sound it out.
Oh, right. There you go. That didn't occur to me. Nice.
Yeah, not good. Sorry.
All right. So,
comments.
So it's still for you to talk, Earl. You're going to talk about a quarterly newsletter. How long has this quarterly newsletter on Tandy been around?
It's been around for years, guys, or something like that. I looked over it.
I've seen it before.
Every now and then, you just stumble on something, and it's like, wow, that is great. How did I possibly not know about that? And so that happened to me when I looked at trs-80.co.uk, right? It's the
trs-80.org.uk.
.org.uk, sorry. trs-80.org.uk, and we'll have a link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But lots of interesting resources at this site, but the most interesting thing to me was the TRS-80-bit newsletter that comes out quarterly. Had all kinds of...
Is it a printed newsletter?
No, it's an online newsletter. Had all kinds of great information about hardware upgrades. Like, there's been these hard drive emulators coming out for the TRS-80 models, for like the Model 3 and Model 4, that I saw another YouTube video about. Somebody had posted a video on using one of those hard drive emulators, and it looked really cool. Also, information about assembly language programming, and they intersperse in this newsletter vintage ads that were printed back in the day.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's fun. And I think, especially if you're interested in TRS-80, you should go take a look at it. But I ran across it. I didn't know how many other people knew about it, so I wanted to...
I've never even heard of it before.
Yeah, I'll let you guys
know. It's an odd idea, having a quarterly newsletter that's online. It's sort of like, I'm going to have a blog, but I'm going to hold off 4 months before I post. And post everything at once.
That's true. That's true.
Because when you're printing things, you have a printing schedule. It's going to be monthly, quarterly, whatever. And if you're just posting them online, it seems odd to have it be quarterly.
I don't know. Maybe
not that there's anything not awesome about this, because this does look great. And I'm excited that I'm going to read it.
Give people some dates, I don't know, to try to work to or something like that. I mean, even the demo crowds used to have certain deadlines that they were working against, right, for competitions and things like that. And that was all electronic, but they'd be working against deadlines. So I don't know. I think you say something about it.
I wonder if this used to be printed, because I'm looking at like old editions, and they definitely look like they're printed out from, you know, vintage hardware even. But this is issue 1, volume 1 was summer 2007, so it did come later.
Well, even if you look at the current version, which was June of 2013, it has that look like it's been printed out on a retro computer and then digitized, something like that. I don't know if they're just using a fancy font to get that effect. Or
I like it. I like the look.
Yeah, it's very cool. It looks like one of the club newsletters from the 80s or something like that.
Absolutely. Sweet. Good find.
The June 2013. All right.
Yep. And the next one's coming in September. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know what? I have now bookmarked. Nice.
You know, the one called Commodore Free, which is pretty good, comes out every month. It's a PDF. Actually, it's in lots of different formats, but it's
You can get that as a disk image too for the actual Commodore 64.
But
yeah,
Commodore
Free is great.
I guess it's part of the whole retro thing too. Is sort of like holding it to make it the way you would have gotten it in the old days by way of a magazine once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's neat looking. I just got it up here on the website. That's cool. All right, so moving along in our list of things. So my item I added here is just I wanted to mention two great, there's lots of great computer history books, and these are actually two older ones, but they just got updated recently. I have one of them, but let me get to it here. The first one, and do either of you have this one called Computer, A History of the Information Machine by Martin Campbell Kelly?
I don't have either of these.
I've looked at it before, and I don't have it, but it just got updated on July 30th, so it's a brand new edition. I think it's a third edition. $39, so I think it's a very academic computer history book, and I won't spend too much time on it. I'm trying to think where the original... I want to say the original version came out like in the mid-late 90s.
But so they have a Kindle for 24, if mm-hmm. you're into that.
So actually, I kind of stumbled on this one by looking at the other one, and the other one is... The Computer, An Illustrated History from Its Origins to the Present Day. And it's by Mark Frauenfelder. And so this was done in 2007, and it was a larger format. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but it's like, I have it, but I can't grab it real quick here. But it's kind of a larger format. It has it's a white cover, and it has like the Sony robot dog from around that time frame, 6 years ago, 7 years ago on the cover. I don't know if you ever saw that one. It's a big coffee table sort of book. So this new one is a little bit smaller format. It's got Steve Jobs on the front. But I picked it up at Barnes & Noble recently. It was on sale, and here at Amazon it's like $21. It's a good coffee table book. And I'm trying to think, the guy Mark Frauenfelder, he has something to do with Make Magazine. He is the former editor of Wired. Oh, and he co-founded Boing Boing. And I'm trying to get to it. Anyway.
So, David, you've talked about these books. You would recommend them?
Well, like I say, if you don't have the first edition, I'd recommend it. I think it's definitely well worth $20. It's a good book. The other one, I've always read good reviews about it, and I've looked at it before. I don't own it, but I know it's a pretty, like I say, slightly more academic kind of book, which, not there's anything wrong with that, but I tend to like more, I guess, ones that are a little bit lighter or more pop culture or, I don't know, not real heavily academic.
More conversational.
There you go. That's how I write and stuff. Yeah, he's an emeritus professor of computer science at the University of Warwick.
Cool.
Him and other authors. So, trying to get back here. What else we got online? Is that it? I guess that's it.
I think so.
Something's coming up the plumbing port, Luigi's in a bind. Giant turtles out to get him, creepy crabs are right behind. Spider flies, keeper shines, they're all coming out the pipes.
Mario, where are you?
It's Atari Mario Brothers, with Mario from Donkey Kong, his brother Luigi, and lots of crazy creatures. And it's twice the fun when two play at once, because you need all the help you can get.
Mario, where are you?
Mario Brothers, new from Atari.
I'm Football One, Mattel's lowest price electronic football game.
And I'm electronic quarterback, Coleco's lowest price.
I run from the line of scrimmage.
I start in the backfield and follow my blockers.
Blockers? I don't have any blockers.
I got 7 men on defense.
7? I've only got 5.
I can even pass.
I can't pass.
My receiver runs short, long, any pattern.
Pattern? I don't even have a receiver.
Or I can score a safety.
Safety?
Coleco's electronic quarterback. A lot more football for the money.
Radio Shack puts the power of business computing in your home and saves you $300. The powerful 286 Tandy 1000, now only $1,199, including color monitor. You save $300. It's PC compatible, easy to use, comes with 7 ready-to-run programs for the family to keep a budget, write term papers, or even do filing and create graphics. Complete Tandy 1000 system with color monitor, only $1,199. Only at Radio Shack.
I think you need to give us a gift idea.
I missed all the doggone Kansas Fest discussion.
We're not telling you. You're going to have to listen to the podcast.
All right, so my gift idea this time is the Mattel Classic Football 2 game.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, did you have, either you guys have one originally?
I do.
Well, for
I have
our,
the I iOS one, version. And I now have I the, have it comes out as an app. You can get this on iOS.
Right,
so
right.
I have that.
Oh, yeah. I should try to add that link
that
here.
That would be kind of fun.
Yeah, works well as an app.
Mm-hmm. About the right size and everything.
I had the slightly cheaper Coleco version of this game, which in a lot of arguments was improved over the Mattel. And for our listeners later, or anybody watching this wants to go check out the audio version, we'll have a commercial for it. The Coleco, in fact, going head-to-head with the Mattel one, will be one of our commercials. So anyway, this is they redid the game in 2002, so it's not a brand-new item anymore. But you can pick them up pretty cheap at eBay. It was like $44 on Amazon, you know, a new old stock. But I put a link to that search on eBay, so you can pick them up all day long in good shape for about $10. So, and basically, it's a new reproduction of the original. So, you know, if you want to really relive those days, hold the thing, and you can't beat it, I don't think.
Now, I have this guy specifically, and the one thing that I will warn you about is you need to...
The reproduction one?
The reproduction one. Yeah, I have this specific model, and you need to not mash on the buttons too hard over and over and over. And the reason I know that is because I did that, and now what it doesn't stick, it doesn't register quite as well. So now that my buttons are kind of pre-mashed, and so now I need to mash even more just to make sure that I get a connection or my little football guy gets tackled.
So I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, these are super fun. And plus, people look at, you know, haul this thing out in Starbucks. People will say, "Oh, yeah, I remember when I was playing that." Or the kids will walk around and go, "That's a baby toy."
Now, if you guys are interested in these, Mike and I talked yesterday. We recorded the next issue or next edition episode, we'll call it, No Quarter. In that, we were discussing handhelds as well. So if you're interested in handhelds, there's a amazing book called Electronic Plastic. I just call it Fantastic Plastic in our Plastic Fantastic in our show notes, but it's Electronic Plastic. It's out of print, but the guy who wrote it has another book coming soon called 2 Kilobytes of Fun. But there's a website for it. You just go to handheldEN, like handheld English, handheldEN.com, and it's an amazing site that has a link and lots of info about basically every handheld and tabletop game you can think of from this era. So all the Coleco stuff, but the Mattel stuff, the MV, and it's got all the things that use that VFD or VF, vacuum fluorescent display, the VFD stuff, as LCD and LED things. Great photos of everything. It's a really amazing site. He has a great collection, has gone on tour, so you can go through the first part of the site and just look at all the pictures and get info about each item. So like right now I'm looking at the Nintendo Donkey Kong, and they'll tell you the year it came out, what kind of batteries it takes, shows you front and back photos of everything, the box sometimes if he has it. And then there's also an information from the tour, so you can sort of read about his books, read about the way it's been displayed, look at some videos of things. It's the most amazing collection of handheld stuff I've ever seen. So it's just a really good site that a listener of No Quarter pointed us to.
It is really nice.
Yeah. So it's called Electronic Plastic, so handheldEN.com. And I'm really looking forward to the next book by this guy, this 2 Kilobytes of Fun book. Looks like it's going to be quite the read.
It's got a nice little device when you click on one of the different brands along the top. Like I'm going to click on Casio here. So now
and then it shows you down the right side all the various Casio ones divided by type and... Yeah.
But fairly quickly, it populates the page, you know, and the little pictures of the devices. But then the number is counting along till it gets to the top, you know, how many are actually there. Yeah. Have you noticed that? Uh-huh. It'll kind of count in. It's just kind of a neat little feature. I like that.
This really is.
Go, wow, how many are there?
Yeah, it's an amazingly done site that we just sort of stumbled on. And so I'm like, a reader just sort of casually mentioned when they were responding to something else. And I was like, what is this? Look at this site. This site is amazing. So, yeah, really good source for these things. So.
I like it.
One other warning on your Classic Football 2, David. That game is really addicting. If you get one of these, you know, just be prepared to lock yourself in a room for a couple hours because this thing just... Yeah, it's strange, too, because it's such a simple idea, right? Just move my little bright LED around the dimmer LEDs. I mean,
right.
It doesn't seem like that should be such a compelling thing, but it is.
I'm probably not going to get one, but I think I actually owned, you know, I got a soft spot. I was just doing a quick check. Looks like I can get one of those for about around the same, 10, 15 bucks in working order. All right, so let's move into eBay. So, Carrington, you are up first, and I saw this because this actually the second.
My auction pick is a little more than $10 and $15, more like $1,600.
Wow.
It's the second listing if you want a sealed, still original sealed copy of Mystery House for the Apple II.
Because he sold another one for that, around that, this price.
I think it was
$1,600. Yeah.
I think it was or something. Anyway, this is the second one. It's a buy it now for $1,600. Bunch of us watching it. We'll see if anybody actually picks this thing up. It's crazy to me that it would go for this much money. But I guess, you know, we're dealing with a game from 1980. It's Roberta and Ken Williams. I guess it's their first game.
Yeah.
And it's basically the thing that starts this. So it starts online systems, which becomes Sierra. So it kicks off a whole genre of games by two of the people that became the most famous names in that genre. There's Roberta and Kevin Williams, and there's Infocom. Like, these are our names for associated with certain types of things. And so when you're dealing with the graphical text adventure or graphical adventure game, some graphics on top and some text on the bottom, this kicks off the genre. So $1,600, though, for a sealed one. I don't know. I'd love to have this, but I would not drop that kind of coin. So that's my first choice. And then similar to that, something I'm far more interested in, and it's only $1,000. So it's, you know, it's like saving $600. There is an Infocom Starcross Flying Saucer. It's the last of the Infocom games that I don't yet have, and it is unfortunately expensive as heck. So it's $1,000. It's not.
Oh, you can make an offer.
I'll offer $100. So they don't come up that often, but they do come up. They do. It's the kind of thing that you can get if you're not if you're willing to wait. But it is $1,000. But there is one right now for somebody who's got more cash lying around than me. So those are my choices: old Apple II games, both of which I would like, neither of which I will purchase.
Speaking of which, I have a related question.
What's your related question?
I saw a tweet. I don't know, a few days ago, about another early serial number Apple II going for some extreme amount of money.
There was one recently.
I don't know, $23,000, $24,000 or something
like
that?
Yeah, I think that happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Does that sound right? Yep. So when I saw that second one going for that amount of money, I started thinking, I wonder at what point it starts to become possible people will try to counterfeit these.
I think we're already at that point. I think there's enough money that there's got to be counterfeit ones around of these sorts of things. I'm surprised nobody's tried to counterfeit an Apple One. But I guess it's hard. You got the Mimeo, you got enough people that know all those tiny little details. So it's interesting that I'm running in a community with people that could spot forgeries, whereas I don't know anybody who could spot forged art other than you know, movie characters.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there's already a lot of forgeries when it comes to sealed things. Lots of things sell on eBay that are sealed, but they are not original shrink wrap.
But see, that's what I was curious about. When you brought up that first one here for $1,600, I thought, you know, I used to work at a software retail store. We had a shrink wrap machine in the back. I mean, there are ways in which you could potentially tell if something had been re-shrink-wrapped.
I have bought lots of things that are shrink-wrapped on eBay, and when I get them, I absolutely know they're not original shrink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to tell. Well, and manufacturers have certain ways that they, once you get to know, like Nintendo carts, they got sealed in a certain way. There's a place where the seal will be. It won't be on a corner, on an edge, rather.
Right.
So you get them, and you look at the seal, and well, that wasn't sealed by Nintendo. Like, so you start to know your manufacturers. I've got enough of the once you get enough brands, you'll start to go, well, this is how Atari sealed their carts for these periods, and this is how Infocom did it for their boxes, that sort of thing.
And so I think you kind of feel the difference.
Yeah, yeah. The plastic itself tends to denature a bit.
And shrink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It should be squeezed in the box by now. Yeah,
right,
that's unfortunate. Like, there won't be any sealed stuff 50 years from now, because that shrink is all, it's going to crush the box eventually, or just splits.
But, you know, 1,000 here, 1,600 there, pretty soon you're talking some real money. And my dad was a coin dealer. And in the coin market these days, if you want to sell a coin for serious money, then
serious coin?
Yeah, serious coin, exactly. You send it to a professional grading service. And
comic books, too.
They take a look at it, and then they do what's, it's not entombing it, slabbing it. They do what's called putting it in a slab, and they put a official computerized grade on the coin, and the coin is like hermetically sealed.
Oh, interesting.
From then on, you can trade that coin with confidence that a professional service has taken a look at it, understands it's not a counterfeit, has done a thorough analysis of its condition. And
you'd be able to, and it gets, does it have like a serial number, so you can trace the provenance back to the company that did the sealing.
Yep.
That makes sense.
All of that. So, you know, with stuff $1,000, $1,600, I wonder how long it's going to be until you start having professional grading services for
they
this classic
now,
software.
And it's me, and anybody with really expensive stuff should send it to me, and I will slobber all over
it. So you can grade it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
I will grade it. I will say, this was a C. I opened up, and I enjoyed it very much.
Carrington's the guy. All right, well.
Absolutely.
Nice.
The first mystery house from the same seller, so that the one that you listed, Carrington's a buy it now for $1,600. So his first one just ended 2 days ago by bidding at $1,691.
Okay.
So whether or not, so I guess he thinks that's what they're worth now, he or she.
I wonder how many of them they have.
Yeah.
This could be like somebody with new old stock, and they've got a box of 50 of them.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll just keep coming online.
And they're going
to
retire.
Like that person out in Venezuela that seems to have every large box SSI game that ever existed and just post them constantly, new and shrink constantly. It's weird. Mm-hmm.
I think Venezuela is where all those new in-box Ataris come from too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
They just have an infinite amount of new in-box things. It's kind of weird.
So moving along to you, Earl, your item sold.
See, I knew it would. I knew it would.
Did you know? Because you were going to buy it? Did you buy this, Earl? Or
did
you just totally just show off?
I didn't buy it. I just looked at that, and I was like, this just got listed. You know, when I do
it's very clean looking.
When I do my eBay listings for the show, I always go to the
newly listed. Oh, for $200? Yeah, holy cow, this probably sold in 5 minutes.
Yep.
I would have bought this, actually.
Yeah, see?
I might have dropped $200 on this. This is a nice looking. We should tell people what it is, though.
It's an Apple II Plus.
Oh, I should have told them.
Along with a couple of other things like joystick manuals, but who cares? It's the Apple II Plus that I care about.
It's got the Super R Mod 2 installed already.
Yep. And when I look at it, I think, oh my gosh, that's beautiful. The seller's right. There's no yellowing. Apparently, it was boxed away for a couple decades. They took it back out and went to sell
it. It looks brand new.
I looked at the Buy It Now for $199. I was like, oh, that might even be gone before we broadcast.
I wonder if that wasn't supposed to be a buy it now, if that was supposed to be a starting price.
No, it was. It was supposed to be a buy it now because there was a starting price of $150.
Oh, okay.
And then why would you make it free shipping?
I don't know.
Why wouldn't you offer shipping to Canada? So I didn't have a chance to even see this not ships to Canada.
I think this was sold by a person who didn't do a lot of research.
I mean, it's not like this would sell for $2,000 or something.
No, but it would sell for...
heck of a lot more than $200, yeah.
Right.
As for me and Earl Carrington, we welcome our Canadian overlords.
We do.
Because this is a very beautiful-looking Apple II Plus. Relatively
and
low
tested.
Serial number-ish.
Tested in good shape.
Tested,
they
working,
went through,
spotless.
They pressed all the buttons on the keyboard. If you look
I
at that
screen. I
want
to buy stuff from this person. Do they have anything else for sale? I should click Save This Seller.
Very clean.
There should be a Save This Sucker button.
Not a lot of sales, though. Only 64 feedbacks for this particular seller. So there you go.
Nice.
You
good
know,
choice.
People listening to RCR, you can't have this because it's bought already. Too bad.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Earl.
I'm a buzzkill. Serious buzzkill.
All right, so your turn, Carrington. What do you got?
I still have what I had 5 minutes ago. Some host.
My turn. Okay. I picked this because I thought it was interesting.
I want what you picked. This
is
awesome.
It's just a piece. It's a one piece of a DEC PDP-11/70. It's a console board, and it's in the United Kingdom, London. So right now it's at $80.95, £53 sterling. So You know, it's really just essentially the circuit board that attaches to the paddle switches on the front of the machine.
And it has all of the paddles.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, how much are those worth? How much is this part worth? And those paddle switches as replacements are have some value.
Yes, I couldn't give you a number, obviously, but people with a PDP 1170 would be very happy to have something like this.
And obviously people are bidding on it, so just struck my fancy, thought it was interesting. The person says, almost certainly won't work.
Well, I mean, it doesn't do anything all by itself.
Yeah, I wonder why they say almost certainly won't work, though. I mean, why not if you put it in a...
No way to know. I mean, if you look at the circuit here, it's just dead simple. It's all those connections into the little edge connector there. So
I'd like to be able to zoom the photo so I could see, look at the traces better, but I don't see anything wrong with anything.
No, I don't see why this wouldn't work.
Yeah, June 25th, 1974.
Yeah.
It was a good year.
It was a good year for PDPs.
Was that late in the PDP 11 run or middle?
No, about middle.
Okay. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of neat, something different.
And the 1170 was a beast. We had one of those at my college that we used for all of the time-sharing stuff that we did there.
And you didn't save it. You didn't preserve it.
Yeah, it wasn't mine. It was the college's.
You didn't steal it.
I never even saw it. It was in the, you know, the room with all the lab coats.
So that PDP 11 was hearsay.
Right. It
might not have existed.
Circumstantial.
We have any comments, Earl?
I think a couple more. Yeah, let me take a look here. Who's commenting? Grumpier Than Thou says, I'm like 95% sure the first Mystery House was somebody else.
Oh, really? I thought it was the same person, too. So I'm going to check.
And I think regarding it, so Luke commented, I'm in London, where did you find that? But I don't know what that comment is regarding, since that PDP 1170 console was from the UK. I'm assuming that's what he means.
Also,
found it on the United States eBay, but it's listed in
London, someone search for? I can give you let me just give you the eBay number. The item number is 161078194287.
Yeah, because YouTube won't let you paste a link in there in the comments.
But they would let me paste that number, right?
Yes.
But again, it's 161078194287, and the title is DEC PDP 11/70 Console Board.
Yeah, so if you search for that, you should spot it pretty quickly.
And
as well.
Yes, the item location is London, United Kingdom.
And it is the case that Grumpy was correct, that it's two different sellers for those Mystery Houses. I assumed it was the same, because what were the odds?
Yeah, me too.
Totally different sellers and totally different places. Well, both in America, but, you know, different parts of your crazy country.
By the way, too, for everybody, is there's a great story, you know, about Sierra Online's history in the book Hackers. You know, one of the four main parts of the book is all about that.
That's a good book. That's a good book.
Yeah, really good book. And the name of the company was Online Systems, and then it became Sierra Online. So that box is the original incarnation of the box for Online Systems. Now, I don't see this in Wikipedia, but if I'm not mistaken, I would just imagine the rarest example of those games is, I believe they sold them where they basically just stuck them in like baggies.
I don't know if this sold
a
baggies.
Disc and a, no, I thought that.
I don't know. Like I've never seen a bagged version of this.
Well, I wouldn't think they. You know, that would have survived, but I could be wrong, but I thought a lot of the early ones, that's how they sold them. They sold them directly out of their house, and then they formed the company and then got a box and so on. But anyway. Well, you know what? That's the show. What are we going to do now?
We're going to discuss. We're going to discuss.
So you discussed that movie, the computer chess movie, Karen.
I went to a movie with a friend of mine. Yes, she and I saw Computer Chess. It was her idea to go see it, too. I'm like, what? You want to see a movie called Computer Chess? Marry me. So it's a very strange and interesting film. And I don't think it's going to have mass appeal, but there's a chance that there's some people among our listenership that would be very interested in this film. So the film is not really mumblecore, but it's a faux documentary in black and white.
Yeah, I've heard it described as a mockumentary, but it really isn't a mockumentary, right? Like Spinal
not
Tap?
Really.
Isn't that what Spinal Tap would be?
No, but it is a comedy fake documentary, but not in a mocking, quasi-mocking sort of way. So what I liked about it, there's lots to not like too, but what I liked about it was it deals with nerds in the way that I grew up thinking of my people as nerds. You know, not today where it's a bunch of, bunch of hip, good-looking hipsters with fake glasses. like, not those people. Real nerds. Real nerds. People who cannot get along in public and are smart. My people. So it's takes place around 1980, and it's a computer chess competition. And that's literally the case. People are bringing in their computers, basically pushing and wheeling in the computers, and computer A will do battle against computer B. And they're basically to try to win, and the winning computer overall will play off against a human. And it's this idea that maybe in the future, computers will even be good enough to beat a human at chess. What I liked about it as well is it's shot with period-appropriate technology. So it's shot on video cameras that existed in 1980. So the whole thing is like a found footage thing, and it's like a documentary from the time. So it's they get the clothing, the computers, the video stock, everything is perfect. This thing could have come out of 1980. So it's a fascinating glimpse of the old tech. It's unfortunately, they go to some weird places where at the same time in the hotel where this is happening, there's also a couples therapy thing happening, and the nerds have to mix with that. And that part I thought was a bit of a misstep. But overall, an interesting and different film, and I think has very limited appeal, but perhaps will have appeal amongst RCR listeners. So while it's still in theaters and still can be gotten to, or I suspect this thing will go direct to Netflix, direct to video fairly quickly. I just thought I'd make people aware of it because it's something you won't see very often. So the website is computerchessmovie.com.
I had one to go see it, even though I didn't think it would completely, I'd be that into it completely, but because of all the nostalgic stuff. Mm-hmm. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's got an 85% from the critics. A little bit lower from the audience, which is unusual, 62%.
I think but how many critics are, I don't think a lot of mainstream critics are looking at it, so it's probably going to be a cherry-picked number of critics that this gets exposed to. It's not going to open wide.
But the premise that tells me it's not a bad film, like what you just said.
No, it's not. It's definitely worth seeing. I'm not upset that I saw it. It was interesting, and we had a good conversation about it afterward. So mostly me explaining the various computers and what I had used and what I hadn't. Well, the person I was with pretended to be interested in that. So I appreciated the effort.
This says it's only made $43,000 at the box office.
I'm not surprised. I was surprised it made that much, actually.
That's kind of shocking.
This is not going to be playing in 1,000 screens, though. This probably is touring right now, and this probably plays in 4 screens at once as it goes around North America. So it's definitely a festival sort of film, but something worth checking out, I think. I not strongly, but subtly recommend it.
So, Earl, moving along to you.
Well, last time I recommended as a gift idea the book Make:Electronics. It's a electronics tutorial book that has a really hands-on approach. You get shopping lists and you go out and you buy all these pieces and then you try to put stuff together and you even get to blow some stuff up, like overload an LED and that's stinky when you do that, just to let you know.
Awesome.
So my daughter and I have been going through this book and having a great time. We're in chapter 2. The chapters are big. Lots of information in there. They call fundamentals and background. They tell you history of the different people who like discovered current or resistance or that kind of thing. And
those who discovered current and then lived to tell others about it, you mean?
Exactly.
I'm sure it was discovered earlier.
So, the listeners can't see this, but I'm holding up a circuit board of the latest project that we did. This is Experiment 7. It's a relay, and it's set up with the switching so that if the button is up, the red LED is on. If you push the button down, the green LED is on. So it shows you multi-pole electronic switching in
the circuit. I used to have an earlier version of that same breadboard, I think. I, too, had an Archer breadboard.
This Radio Shack? Yeah, there was a Radio Shack in my town that went out of business, and they were blowing stuff out. And I was like, oh, talk to me, baby. So I went over there, and I bought a bunch of stuff.
Nice.
I do have – so we're in Experiment 7. The first set of experiments is 1 through 11, really, when you get this, kind of shopping list of things. So we've spent lots more on the pieces than we have on the book. The book was, I think, less than $10 for the ebook version.
Oh, nice.
Whereas,
wow.
We've probably spent $35-$40 on the components so far. We're having a great time. Anyway, great way to learn. I'm learning some stuff. My analog electronics is not very strong, which is why I wanted to go through this. My digital electronics, I got that stuff. But, you know, I've always had trouble with the analog. Like, why'd you put a capacitor there? What does that do? You know, that kind of thing. I'd like to be able to make projects, but sometimes the digital stuff doesn't work because the analog stuff is getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to get past that. So we're having fun. That's the deal.
And people who are interested in that sort of thing, I will. And if you're watching us live on YouTube, which means you understand how to use YouTube, you should go off and subscribe to Jerry Ellsworth's channel. So he does great videos where she will introduce things like, this is gate logic and how it's used, or this is, and odd things, like stuff that you're just not going to see elsewhere. She'll do, like, this is magnetic logic recently, and it's really things I don't see anywhere else. So interesting
person. Even if you want to know how this works and you want to make one, like, let's make a transistor.
Yes, let's. I mean, yes, let's.
Hey, Carrington, since you followed Jerry Ellsworth, I guess, fairly closely then, or closer than I do.
I used to like her old show, Fat Man and
Circuit
Other Girl. Circuit Girl, was that it? Fat Man?
I
like
so.
Something about a man and a girl. Those were great.
Well, you know, she was an engineer at Valve, and then she got...
For a while, and then she rage quit or something. Oh, no, I think she was fired. Valve seems to be an odd place. And she recently did a podcast interview that they broke up into, like, five parts, some long interview, where I think she goes off a bit on Valve. And I haven't heard it yet, but I've bookmarked it. Or I think I've downloaded it.
I have to check that out.
I just
curious
to hear it.
Has she said where... Has she gotten a job somewhere else?
I'm sure that she will. But, no, I don't know.
I have to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
I know she recently... Actually, I just watched the video of hers that I stumbled on. And it, you know, it's an older video, not too old, but where she made the Commodore 64 into the electric guitar.
The guitar, yeah.
And that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And just while you're talking, too, about Earl, I'm sorry. Yeah, the guy, Mark Frauenfelder, who did the one book I was talking about. So he is the editor-in-chief of Make Magazine.
Nice.
I bring that up again because, you know, you're talking about Make.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew he was something with Make. So, yeah, he's like the head guy at Make. All right. So basically it brings it to me. So my little notes, I basically say I'm sort of retiring.
You look so young to retire.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I would retire, like, from work, but I can't do that. So I have to keep making a living for God knows how long.
Make, colon, living.
So you're not going out in an Airstream with a sticker, I'm spending my children's inheritance. And...
I would do that. I would too.
In fact, I look forward to, I want to be one of those old guys, and, you know, with my wife, an old couple who drives all over the country in a, you know, the RV.
That kind of appeals to me too. Weirdly,
RV people
I've always
are
thought.
Nice people. They're really social, fun, nice people.
Mostly I'm not into people, and this would be a way to get away from
that. Yeah, so that'd be, well then. Well, of course, I'm talking about stopping at the RV parks. You don't have to do that. You could instead, you know, go to campsites or wherever.
It's more that I dig the look of old classic ones, like the Airstream and,
yeah, me too.
And those old-fashioned, I don't know if I'd actually enjoy those one, but I like the look of them.
Cool. Anyway, so I'm working on two things right now, is so I'm kind of wrapping up some things that have to do with the computer history hobby. It doesn't mean I'm not so interested in computer history, because I really am. But for one thing, I've been working on the story, you know, I did an ebook version of my book recently, so I'm selling that. But I'm actually going to make my story I wrote for the book public now. So I'm editing it to put it on my website. So that's free, you know, tonight. Hopefully I'll be done. Then I'm writing a blog post where I'm going to kind of go into more detail just about why and what I'm doing. So, but in a nutshell, I still very much enjoy computer history, but I'm retiring from the podcast. I'm not going to really be doing too much stuff where it's my focus. Computer history anymore, but I'm keeping most of the stuff I care about and all. It's just that I'm going to put my interest in some other things. So the energy I'm putting, it's just anyway. I'm going to talk. Basically, I want to move into comedy.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a joke.
Yeah, well, not stand-up comedy though. But my love has always been something I'll try to talk about just a little bit. But my first love has always been comedy, believe it or not, over anything else in the whole world. And sketch comedy particularly. You know, back in the old days, in the 70s when I was a little boy, you know, you had things called variety shows. Sonny and Cher and the Kill Burnett
Show. Oh,
yeah,
those are great.
And many more than that. And basically you had a host, and they did some monologue, and then they'd have maybe a guest on that sung, and then they did lots of sketches, and they were funny. And what happened to that? I guess it's just not cool or fun anymore. And then later on, in 1975, you had Saturday Night Live and some of those kind of things were purely sketch comedy where they maybe have a musical guest. And that's still around, even though I'm not a big fan of Saturday Night Live at all anymore. And maybe because I'm old, I don't know. I just don't connect with their sense of humor. I think they're way too focused on the guest host and what can we do around the guest host every show versus let's be funny. And if we can work the guest host in, cool. And then they run sketches into the freaking ground, you know, where it's funny first time, second time, okay, third time, maybe. I mean, it's a rare sketch or something you can just, you can make into a show, I guess. So anyway, so one thing I'm doing here local in the Atlanta area is I'm trying to sort of find out about the local comedy scene. Again, I'm not interested, I'm not suggesting I'm going to try to go into stand-up comedy. I don't know if I could do that or it's not really my thing, but I'd like to, I'm going to take an improv class or a few of them and try to break into maybe sketch comedy.
Fun. Very cool. I don't know if you guys know break some into, of my... into actually performing sketch comedy or writing for it?
Both.
Oh, both. Cool.
Yeah, and I did some of that before I went to the Army in 1990, so as a young man in my early 20s, and I before I married and stuff. And then I guess I thought, I was living in Gainesville, Florida, where the University of Florida is, and I was actually on a comedy radio show for a while, and I was a new guy, and I was a niche player, but I actually wrote a few things, and out of these few things I wrote, they used all of them. They were good. They liked them. And
Was that fun?
Oh, I loved it. It was like a dream come true, but then I ended up moving, and I guess maybe I just thought, well, you know, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I've moved, and where else am I going to find a situation like that to be a part of? Because, again, I've never really been interested in stand-up other than I can enjoy stand-up, but me being a stand-up comic, no, I didn't have any interest in that. That's how most people break into comedy. But then, you know, I joined the Army, and I got married, and lots of things changed in my life, and you know, I was very seriously interested in computer history and the collecting, and so I've been very focused on that for the last 20 or so years. And I think what happened is I had children, my life got complicated, I fell out of what I was doing, and I really wanted to finish and get back into what I was doing. So I don't want to spend too much time on this. Like I said, I want to try to write about it, but just that's basically where I'm coming from. Call it a midlife crisis. I'm just ready to move into something else. But yeah, I love comedy. And I want to do something relating to that.
Some more good quality comedy, honestly, because you're right. A lot of the stuff that's out there just isn't funny. I mean, Steve Martin says comedy is not funny, but I don't think he meant it literally. So,
I never heard that one from him.
Yeah.
Well, and I have strong opinions about comedy. And the last thing I'll share with our audience and you guys is, and so you maybe give me your comments on this. I know I tweeted some of it, but here's my attitude about comedy is that you cannot argue with funny. If something is funny, it's funny. It doesn't matter how offensive it is. It doesn't matter how inappropriate, how adult, how whatever. If it's funny, it's funny. It's just that me personally, I'm not a prude, and I don't have a problem with things that are adult or whatever, but it's just not my style. It's not what I like. And frankly, I think it takes more effort to try to be funny where it's everybody can find it funny. So I guess a lot of people want to call that family-friendly, which has a bad rap, right? Family friendly means watered down and, you know, you're not free to really express the funny. And I just think, so basically, my attitude about comedy is I'd like to do something that would be everyone comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was a kid. I mean, it can be a little racy here and there and suggestive and some stuff, but just throwing out the F word every freaking 30 seconds. And
it's when you rely on
sexual and everything and just, yeah.
Yeah.
So David, what I'm taking away from this is you're going to do porn. Is that correct?
Yeah.
This is comedy. The rumor I'm spreading now, so I just want to see if that's accurate. So, got it. DavidDoesPorn.com. Fantastic. I look forward to seeing all of you. I look forward to your lower camera. Great.
There you go. See, that was funny, and you didn't have to be necessary. You suggested inappropriate, but you didn't really.
But when we put the audio out of this, we're just going to have it be beep 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 beep, beep and no one will know what I actually said.
Right. So there you go. So everybody, I know I tweet and stuff. So this is going to be my last appearance on the RCR. Oh yeah, but don't forget, I'd love to be a guest host.
No,
anytime.
You're not funny enough. I'm sorry.
Please.
Not even a chance.
We need you to swear more. Earl and I have talked about it, and the direction we want to go in is much racier. It wasn't me, it's Earl. Potty mouth Earl, as everybody knows.
Yeah, that's right.
Most
right.
Offensive, most aggressive person in
the show. Man. You know, and it's quite, it's actually kind of, I mean, come on, me breaking into comedy, I'm 49 years old, but also with my
attitude. What the heck? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's not. And also, is
the jewel on your palm blinking or is it going black? Because that will tell you whether or not you have time to do this before you go to Carousel.
That would be a great remake if someone would do it right, which they wouldn't do it right.
They will not. They will do it very wrong.
That's a movie that should be remade.
Did you guys hear there? Are they remaking RoboCop?
I thought I
thought that probably. I heard that they were going to remake it. I don't know. I don't know if you can remake RoboCop.
I could remake RoboCop.
Oh, yeah. RoboCop.
Here they are, 2014. It's in the IMDb.
I don't want them to do it.
It's going to be so much better.
No, it won't. It'll be bad.
Yeah, it will be.
I should tell them, stop your effort now. Thank you for your cooperation.
So that's it, everybody. Cool. Any other last comments, parting shots, are from our audience, Earl?
We're going to miss you, David. Parting shot.
And I love you guys.
Aww.
And, you know, all joking aside, Mr. Comedy, of course you're always welcome on the show.
All joking aside, Comedy.
Wait, ba-dum-bum.
And,
keep that in mind. And, of course, I'd love to be on anybody's podcast because I still like this. And maybe I'll start trying to do a comedy podcast. Who knows? Oh, the last thing I want to say, though, is the Stan Veit audiobook podcast. I've been saying this for – I haven't done one in 2 years. But also, I really want to move into that and really focus on it and get it going again.
But you're going to do it as a comedy.
Yeah. No.
We do have a couple of parting shots from the –
One of them,
Vintage Volt says, who doesn't have an Archer breadboard? I think it's true. I think those things are ubiquitous. Do you have one, David?
No, I don't. But I do.
And that's why we're kicking you out of the podcast.
I have an Arduino breadboard. See?
Ooh, Arduino, very cool. Arduino.
And also the user AfroTechMods on YouTube has some good electronics theory videos also.
Nice. Okay.
And Neko Noko says, I had one of the Radio Shack kits with the spring clips. You guys remember those? Like
That
launched my whole.
I've had those.
Absolutely. Boy, that brings back a lot of memories.
Love those things. Yeah. Anyway, that's the parting shots from you.
Nice.
Yeah, parting shot from me, David, wherefore art thou?
Who's got my David?
I'll be listening to the show.
Good.
You guys are going to carry on, right?
That means we can't talk about you as much.
Oh, yes, we can. You wait till next episode, David. We're going to slash you completely. It's going to be awesome.
So
I'm going to wrap it up. That's it for this show.
All right.
And the next RCR will be on Sunday, August 18th at the normal time, which is 4 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Pacific. Find all the show notes for all the RCR shows at rcrpodcast.com. You can discuss in the forums at vintage-computer.com/VCF forum. I'm sorry, VC forum. The link to that is in the show notes as well and on our site. Follow RCR on Twitter at RCR Podcast. Send feedback to the show at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. And please, won't you write a review on iTunes? I don't know when the last time the show got one. The show needs more reviews. Do it. Help the show out.
Do it.
So until next time,
Roco
Bye, everybody.